Welcome to Bizarre Podcast.
When you think of Easter, what do you think of? I like to think of a day of happiness, a day of peace, Easter egg decorating, just festive family fun. In 1975, on Easter Sunday, all of which I just mentioned was taking place at the home of the Rupert family, 635 Minor Avenue in Hamilton, Ohio. Charity Rupert, the mother of the household, was in charge of cooking the meal that day. She had a house full of family members, 12 in total, including 8 grandchildren ranging from 4 to 17, and her oldest son and wife, who were mother and father to the children. Her younger son, James Rupert, slept upstairs recovering from a night on the drink. At around 4 p.m, James woke up from his drunken slumber, loaded a .357 Magnum and two .22 caliber handguns and a rifle. He then went downstairs and systematically killed everybody in the house. Not even the young children would survive. On today's episode, I will be covering the Rupert family Easter Sunday massacre of 1975. Before we go back to the actual murders, I think we need to go back to James's past, to his childhood, and try and understand what was going on in his troubled mind. Because as you may know, serial killers and murders, they always seem to have a connection to the crime, which stems from a point in their life, mainly from childhood, where maybe they were neglected or abused or something like that. First of all, the upbringing of James Rupert seemed to be questionable at best. Apparently, James Rupert's mother, Charity Rupert, constantly told James that she had never wanted to have a boy, and she often told him that she wished that he was born a girl, which I think, and I'm sure you'll agree, is something that should never ever be said to a child. I've got 2 children, and I would never ever dream of saying anything like that to them. Ever. Now, his father, who escaped the murders due to passing away in 1947 when James was aged 12, he actually showed very little love or affection for the children. So it would seem that James had little or no love from his mother or father. After his father died, James's older brother Leonard became the man of the house and would constantly pick on James, taunting him and calling him a weakling and always putting him down at every chance he got. This resulted in James running away from home at the age of 16. And he also tried to hang himself with a sheet, but he was unsuccessful and he returned home. So as you can see, he had quite a rough upbringing, an unloved upbringing. That is if we can believe his story, that any of this is true, which we'll get back to a little bit later. Now, as 1975 came around, the year of the murder, James had matured into adulthood. James became very jealous of his brother, who now had a large family of his own and a marriage. James, on the other hand, had no job, no relationship, no children, and still lived at home with his mother. Now, in contrast, his older brother Leonard had a degree in electrical engineering. He had married James's ex-girlfriend, which must have been just another crippling hit on his state of mind. And Leonard also was a homeowner and had 8 children. So, as you can see, his brother Leonard seemed to be the successful one where life was going well. But James's life seemed to be standing still and he wasn't really going anywhere. He must have felt like the failure of the family. And on top of all that, James's mother was constantly threatening him with eviction from her home due to a lack of a job and drinking, and owing his mother and brother quite a big sum of money. So as you can imagine, he probably felt that he wasn't wanted. And it's probably worth mentioning at this point that people also outside of the family didn't really think much of him. Because you see, after the murders, quite a few people were questioned, and a few of the people had described him as an helpful man, but unremarkable and quiet. I mean, what a thing to be described as, unremarkable. So it would seem that not many people held him in such high esteem. In the weeks leading up to the fateful Easter Sunday, James seemed to slip even deeper into his dark depression and became distant and recoiled from social behaviour. A month before the murders, James started to inquire about silencers for weapons. And you see, at this time, James actually already owned the weapons and he already owned the ammunition, so it would seem that inquiring about silencers, that maybe he was already planning the murders a few weeks beforehand. Maybe it was premeditated. Now, on his 41st birthday, which fell on the 29th of March 1975, James was seen on the banks of the Great Miami River in Hamilton, and it would seem that he wanted to spend his entire birthday on the riverbank shooting his .357 Magnum at tin cans, apparently getting in some target practice before the big day. The night before the murders, James had gone out to drink as usual, as he did every night. James drank at the 19th Hall Cocktail Lounge until 11 p.m, but did return later that night and stayed until closing time, which was 2:30 a.m. And whilst he drank, he started to talk to one of the waitresses, a Wanda Bishop, a 28-year-old woman who worked at the bar. Now, Wanda recalled how troubled James seemed that night and down in the dumps. He made conversation about his mother, how she was always on his back, threatening him with eviction. He told Wanda how his mother would say, "If you can afford to drink every night, then you can afford rent." And you know what? That's fair enough. I think his mother actually had a point with that. You know, why should she keep him under his roof if he's not going to pay rent, he's not going to provide any food or anything like that, but somehow he's got the money to go out and drink every night. I think his mother had a point. Then at 2:30 a.m, James left the bar and headed home and slept off the booze until 4 p.m. the following day, the day of the massacre. Easter Sunday arrived, and so did James's brother Leonard and James's ex, Leonard's wife, with their 8 children to spend the day with their grandmother. Whilst the Rupert family enjoyed their Easter Sunday together, Easter egg hunting and other activities, James was upstairs, still sleeping off the booze from the night before. At some point, the family returned into the house. James's mother, his brother, and his brother's wife were all in the kitchen, and most of the children played in the living room. Upstairs, James woke from his drunken sleep. This was around 4 p.m. He then loaded his weapons, a 357 Magnum, two 22 caliber pistols, and a rifle. Probably round about 5 o'clock, James finally ventured downstairs with murder on his mind. The day he had probably been thinking about for some time had finally arrived, and James then entered the kitchen. Now at this point, I have heard different versions of the story. I've heard that James just went in and started blasting away, but I have also heard that he went in, he propped the shotgun up against the fridge and started a conversation about a vehicle. And I believe that James became paranoid that he was being criticised about this vehicle, this conversation about a car, and that's when he picked up the weapons and started shooting, which unfortunately is the only certain conclusion that we can get from this. Now, apparently when he started firing, his brother was sat down at the kitchen table. He pointed his weapon at his brother and pulled the trigger, killing him. He then turned his gun onto his brother's wife, and I believe he shot her in the heart. And then he turned the gun onto his mother and killed her as well. He also killed his nephew, 11-year-old David, and his niece, 9-year-old Teresa, and his 13-year-old niece, Carol, right there in the kitchen. And I believe the children were in the kitchen either helping with the meal. I have heard also that they could have been in the kitchen because they were waiting to go to the bathroom. James, who seemed committed and seemed to have no remorse or emotion about what he was doing, then walked into the front room to kill his remaining nieces and nephews. He then walked in and opened fire on Leonard Jr., who was only 17 years old. He then opened fire on Michelle, who was 16 years old, Thomas, who was 15 years old, Anne, who was 12 years old, and lastly, little John, who was only 4 years old. James had shot everyone in the house 3 times to ensure that they were dead, apart from one child, who he only shot the once. It is believed that he initially went through the house and shot everyone with one bullet first, and then went back and put the extra bullets into them. This is the way the police think it happened, because there wasn't much sign of a struggle. It would seem that everyone was taken by surprise, and it would also seem that no one tried to run away or dodge the bullets. In fact, the only signs of a struggle that the police could find was an overturned trash can in the kitchen. Apart from that, it would seem that no one really put up much of a struggle. It would seem that they were all basically taken by surprise. Apparently, it was all over within 5 minutes. The entire house lay dead. 3 to 4 hours later, James would finally call the police and turn himself over. And at around 9:30 p.m, the police arrived. Upon the authorities entering the house, it was reported that around the bodies there was a hell of a lot of blood, and it was dripping through the floorboards into the basement. And apparently the blood that dripped through to the basement could still be seen for quite some time on the basement floor, and also on the wooden floor where the family laid dead upstairs. Apparently the blood stains didn't come out of the wood. It was also reported that a total of 35 rounds had been shot, and all 4 weapons were recovered in the house. Now, when it finally came round to the trial, James pleaded insanity. Now, a lot of people believe his motives were simply money. You see, with his mother and brother dead, all of the family's net worth, which came to around $300,000, would then go to James. And if his plea of insanity was successful, then he would only serve a fraction of the time in prison, and the money would be simply waiting for him upon his release. Also, James had told the police officers who arrived at the scene of the crime, now this is strange, he told the police officers that his mother drove him crazy by always combing his hair and always talking to him like a child, and apparently, according to James, his mother wanted to change him into a homosexual. Now, if you ask me, that's just a really strange thing to say to the police when they arrive. So maybe it was all to support his insanity plea. Maybe he was playing up to it. Or his mother was actually that cruel from day one. I guess we'll never really, really know. You see, the only problem was that the neighbours, friends and so on all said that the Rupert family seemed like the salt of the earth, like a really nice family. Always polite and genuinely nice. James was eventually given a life sentence in prison, and the house would go back up for sale. All the goods inside the house where the family were slain, furniture and such, were all auctioned off. And then the house was cleaned up as best it could be. Unfortunately, like I said before, the bloodstains proved difficult to remove, so they were simply covered up with new carpets, and the house was then rented, but to a new family, who had absolutely no idea whatsoever what had gone on in the house. They had no idea about the massacre. I just find it disgusting that they weren't told about this before they moved in. I think now there's actually some kind of law where, like, full disclosure, where you have to tell people if something bad has actually happened in the house. And you have to remember, at that time, there was no internet. There was nothing like that, so it was probably easy to keep something like that under wraps. But of course, eventually, they did find out. The family would not stay long, and they fled the house not long after moving in. Apparently, they were terrorized by ghostly voices and noises. The lights would flick on and off, and doors would slam, and footsteps could be heard running up and down the stairs on occasion. Now, you could say that once the family found out about the murders, you could put all this down to the wild imagination just cooking all this up. I mean, you will hear what you want to hear. If you want to believe your house is haunted, 9 times out of 10, you probably will start hearing noises. But that being said, it wasn't the only family to report strange noises and voices and an unnerving feeling in the house, and they also quickly left. And I believe that the house then remained empty for quite some time, until 2014, when a new family moved in, and the lady of the house says that she hasn't felt anything supernatural, no horrible feelings in the house, she's not heard any noises, and she absolutely loves the house. And she says it just feels like home. So now, after 40 years, maybe the Rupert family finally get to rest in peace. Whilst James Rupert, who is still alive to this day, sits in his cell behind bars on a life sentence, James is set for a hearing, which is set for April 2025. And when that day comes around, James will be 91 years old. And now we come to the end of the James Rupert Easter Sunday Massacre. Thanks for listening, guys. I hope you enjoyed the episode today, as grim as it was. And before we go, I've got a bit of news for you. And that reminds me, from now on, if I have got anything to tell you, any news or any updates on the podcast, I will be putting it now at the end of the episode rather than at the beginning, because I find it frustrating when I'm listening to a podcast and I've got to sit through all the information and whatever they've got to tell me before the actual episode starts. So from now on, I just want to start the podcast straight into the episode, so you can just get straight into the topic that you've actually downloaded the episode for. And then I'll give you any news that I might have at the end of the episode. So if you want to listen to it, if you want to know what's going on, you can just carry on listening. And if you don't, you can just stop the podcast there. What I wanted to tell you about today is a new podcast that I'm working on. I think I may have mentioned it in the past. At the moment, I'm 2 episodes in. I'm not going to be releasing the podcast until I've got a bunch of episodes that I can release in one go, so I can give you quite a bit of content up on the release. The new podcast is going to be quite different compared to Bizarre Podcast. The new podcast will be covering subjects that are very popular in pop culture, such as movies, video games, books, TV shows, icons, characters. The list is endless. We could go on forever with pop culture. There's so much stuff we can discuss. But like I said, the podcast isn't up and running yet. I'm still trying to bulk record a few episodes so I can give them to you all at once rather than you just having one or two episodes. I want to give you quite a few at once for the launch. But what is up and running right now is a Facebook group that I've created, Pop Culture Pedestal Facebook Group. That will be the name of the podcast also. If you want to come and join the Facebook group now, I can keep you updated on the new podcast. We can also keep you updated on Bizarre Podcast, which we're going to be turning into a network, I think, of the two podcasts. I'm probably going to be changing the website into, like, probably change the name to, like, Bizarre Network or something like that. So when you go to the website, you'll be given the option to click on Bizarre Podcast or click on to Pop Culture Pedestal website, something like that. I'm not sure yet. I'm still thinking about it. But like I said, if you want to come and join the Facebook group, and you can be updated on the podcast. Also, if you'd like to hear a certain subject on the new podcast, the Pop Culture Pedestal podcast, you can suggest it to me on the group and I'd be more than happy to have a look at it and see if it's something we can turn into an episode. So there you go, guys. That's my news. I will put links to the Facebook groups, both of them, to Bizarre Podcast and the new one, Pop Culture Pedestal. I'll put the links down in the podcast description. So you can go there and click it. And if you want to join, that'd be fantastic. And I'll be made up to see you. I really will. So all that's left for me to say now is take care of yourself. I hope you're all doing well, considering what's going on in the world at the moment. You know, hopefully things will settle down soon and the world can get back to normal. So anyway, all that being said, take care of yourself. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.